I'm Daryl Etherington, and I'm here with
Anthony Ha.
And we are bringing you Original Content, the weekly podcast from TechCrunch where we talk about everything original and streaming. Hello, Anthony.
Yep. Hello, Daryl. So we're going to talk about the news, and then we're going to do a review of Little Evil, which is a Netflix original movie.
Wow, that was the most business-like introduction we've ever done.
Yeah, don't get used to it.
Maybe because it was take two.
That's right. Daryl forgot to record, and we did a whole episode, basically. And so this is us just, like, trying to remember what we said.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be repeating it word for word. No, not actually. We didn't get that far. But yes, we do have a lot of news to cover this week. It was a sort of a big news week in streaming. Lots of big names, big partnerships, splashy stuff. Most of it's still in the theoretical stage, but some of it confirmed and all pretty big. What did you think about this week in news?
Yeah, I agree that, I mean, I think the last few weeks there's been news, but it's been with sort of smaller deals and sort of just like a steady trickle of news. Like this week it was like, whoa, like big stuff. And sort of the first big one being news that Apple and Amazon are bidding for the rights to the James Bond franchise, which is supposed to be worth, I think, $2 to $5 billion. So, like, I think you even put in your article about this that, like, Apple was supposed to be paying $1 billion in for video content next year, which seems like a lot of money. And yet, just to get James Bond, they would essentially have to pay several multiples of that.
Yeah. I think that maybe it sounded like they, based on the reports, they had sort of joined more recently. So maybe this was sort of like a target of opportunity thing that came up.
Right.
And it was led by their former Fox, I believe, executives who they brought in to head up their media team and acquisition team. So, you know, maybe this new energy coming in at the executive level was able to sort of convince them, you know what, it's worth it if we go for it. And I mean, this would definitely be a game changer. It would be sort of a, you know, 0 to 100 kind of start, right? Like going from carpool karaoke and whatever.
Right. That's basically like the whole spectrum right there. I mean, unless you like count like, you know, random people in their bedrooms, and certainly that's some interesting stuff. But like in terms of like professional original content, carpool karaoke at like one end, James Bond at the other end. You got the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. And they also, this is sort of smaller news, but they also hired a couple more former Fox executives to come join that team. Presumably, you know, the ones they did hire on are bringing up on some of the people they used to work with to make it even stronger and more of a mature entertainment organization.
Do you feel like this is in part like an acknowledgement that the initial launch, you know, with Carpool Karaoke and Planet of the Apps hasn't necessarily gone that well, and so they really need to get more serious about it?
Yeah, I think it is sort of that. I think it might also be, I mean, we don't really know, there's zero transparency in terms of the numbers of how that's doing or anything like that. Right. So it is also still possible that, like, those are doing pretty well for them relative to the money that Apple laid out for that. Like,
right, that's fair. I mean, there's definitely, like, I think when we look at like reviews, that's sort of like the buzz on social media, that's a lot of how we judge success when we don't have the actual viewership numbers. But certainly there's a lot of things that, you know, I think of like on Netflix, like the Adam Sandler movies or Fuller House, which I cannot think of a single person who likes either of those things. And yet no. Netflix seems to be happy with the performance of both.
Super happy with the performance. Fuller House just keeps going. And they had some like big guest star news or something that was super weird. Oh, that's a throwaway bring up because I'll never remember what it is. But yeah, well, maybe we'll include a link if I get it after the record. But anyways, we're already off on a tangent. Back to this. Apple, Amazon, James Bond news. And I think
that
Apple was the one.
Business-like opening did not last for very long.
No, exactly. Wandering left and right. But it was interesting to me that Amazon didn't get as much of the attention. I guess it's because it's like very novel to see Apple in this. It also sounds like Apple maybe had this stronger position or offering on this too.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think it may also just be that, you know, for whatever reason, Apple is like a little leakier, or it also has the new team members, whereas Amazon, this is definitely a much bigger bet than anything they've done, but it doesn't necessarily represent quite as big a leap as the Apple one. Like, you can see that this is a big bet, but it's part of the strategy that Amazon has kind of already been rolling out, whereas the Apple thing, you're just like, whoa.
Yeah.
And I would assume that Netflix, I mean, maybe just doesn't want to spend the money, but also isn't in the running because it's not interested in, as we've discussed in past episodes, putting movies in theaters. And presumably, this would involve, in part, a theatrical rollout.
Right. And I think that will be another really interesting part of Apple's strategy if that ends up being the case, that they work together. Because there are other cases where they've looked to sort of bypass that. Like, there was the... there's that early rental scheme that they're trying to work out for some content, which would kind of cut
theaters. Right, with like this 4K content that you'd pay like some crazy amount of money. And not like, you know, like, I forget exactly.
$30 or something like that. Yeah. And then get access to it like a week or two after its theatrical release or something like that. So, you know, in other places, it's shown that it's willing to kind of take on the theaters, but it'd be interesting if with their film ambitions, they were able to do some kind of a compromise. And I mean, that could be a negotiating tactic for that too, because if they own the rights to these big movies, it's probably a lot easier for them to go to a theater and say, you know, we'll give you the theatrical release, but then we want a window shortly after that for the 4K rental. So they might be able to get everything they want and more, because then they'll have the streaming rights in perpetuity for this stuff too, or not in perpetuity, but for the set term of the agreement.
Right. And I think the other thing that's interesting about this is, so obviously this does include the next and probably final Daniel Craig film, but that there's sort of this implication that part of the reason people are willing to spend so much money on the franchise is they want to sort of take it from being the sort of traditional Hollywood franchise where you get a new movie, makes a lot of money, comes out every, you know, 2 to 4 to 5 years, and instead treat it much more like this Marvel franchise where they can have, you know, or a Marvel universe where they can have TV shows, presumably movies about, you know, side characters, and really, you know, just really blow it out.
Yeah, the cinematic universe term comes into play here, right? Where they would be able to do, who knows, maybe a young indie cartoon. That'd be awful, actually.
You mean young James Bond?
Oh, yeah. Indiana Jones is what I was like, is that the model
we've had, oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, that's right.
But I did, I confused them there. I loved those shows when I was a kid, the young Indiana Jones shows with River Phoenix, was it?
No. You're not to get super nerdy, but in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, you do see young Indiana Jones briefly, and he's played by River Phoenix.
Oh.
Then they made a whole television show, and he was not in that. There were some other actors for that.
Okay, yeah. That's because I watched that show, but wow, that's funny that's all conflated in my memory to being one single event. But I don't think that would actually work with James Bond because of the overt misogyny and other things like that.
Right. It's a weird thing because for a number of reasons. One is it's hard to imagine like what are the like, I'm not really interested in seeing, I think that like the actress, like Naomi, God, I can't remember her full name, but like the actress Naomi Harris who plays Miss Moneypenny, is great. I'm not interested in seeing like a TV show or a movie just about her. Maybe like a show about like some of the other secret agents, like Felix Leiter, but like I just don't like.
You don't think a Moneypenny could work in like a Peggy Carter type way?
Maybe. Because she is. That is one of the cool things. Well, one of the weird things about the new James Bond movies is that Moneypenny starts out as a secret agent and then ends up basically as a secretary.
Right.
And so, but you could do like a show about her when she's a secret agent, or like if she like goes back into the field or something.
Yeah. Well, they have lots of opportunity, and it could go very, very wrong, or it could be fun and fine too. So.
Right. I have to say fundamentally, like, there's a part of me that's just like, I don't even understand why they're still aside from money, which is the real answer, is like, creatively, I don't understand why they're still making James Bond films anyway.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, there are so many of them. I will say, I thought that especially with Casino Royale, like, I was like, oh, there's still new stuff that you can do with James Bond. But even so, I'm just like, I feel like the Daniel Craig stuff even has gotten a bit tired at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And it is something that you could see, like, this new Apple entertainment megalith doing a bad job with too, right? Like based on their past experience, like if they don't understand what makes it attractive to audiences. Because I mean, that's kind of what they've done so far, right? Like they were like, oh, people like American Idol, let's make that, but for apps, and it's just not good. And then like people like this James Corden segment, let's just do that divorced from the rest of the show, which is what makes it good, right? So
yeah, I think, of course, you secretly don't think it's even good, and you, Daryl, don't think it's good anyway, but
I didn't want to get poisonous and vitriolic so early in the show, but yeah, of course I hate James Corden and anything James Corden touches.
All right, let's get back into positivity. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about Star Wars and Marvel.
Star Wars and Marvel. And this is bad news also, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Because I realized that I sort of was like, well, it's not really super. I don't think our discussion of it is going to be that positive. So people who, you know, have been following the news, or even I think we talked about this on a past episode, was Disney launching its own standalone streaming service. And, you know, there was some ambiguity at the time about what would happen to the Marvel and Star Wars content, because it seemed like the Disney service was really going to be focused on sort of the family and kids content. Mm-hmm. So potentially, you know, you could get standalone Marvel and Star Wars apps, or it could continue to be on Netflix. And now Bob Iger is saying, no, it's all going to be in the Disney app, right? Or the Disney service.
Yeah. He basically followed up, like, the timeline of this was like the Iger announced, you know, we're going to have a streaming service. It's going to be 2019. That's going to feature Disney and Pixar movies. And then we're still figuring out what we're going to do with Lucasfilm and Marvel. So it was never the case that like, oh, but these will still be definitely available elsewhere. This is a thing that we need to figure out still.
Yeah. And there were reports that Netflix was like, that they were having like active negotiations.
Yeah. Netflix wanted to make clear, like, we're still talking about this. But now at this new investor conference on Thursday, when we're recording this, Iger has said, no. We decided, we made the decision. These movies are going to go to our streaming service, which makes a ton of sense in terms of like, making that streaming service a successful product, right?
Like, right.
It would be very difficult to sell something that's going to cost, presumably, I don't know, like between $5 and $10 a month, let's say.
Right. Or even potentially slightly more.
Or even more, yeah.
Yeah, like an HBO costs more than that.
Right. So if you want to sell it to people and you're just saying, you know, Disney and Pixar, I think that, you know, it's just easier to say, well, also Disney, Pixar, Lucasfilm, and Star Wars, right? Like, and Marvel.
Right. And even, I don't even know that, you know, these things are always sort of evolving, and maybe, you know, 5 or 10 years from now, that landscape looks really different and where you find it. But like, especially for the launch, it totally makes sense that you just want to put, you know, just if you've got these giant franchises, then of course you want to like use that to launch your service with as big a splash as possible.
Yeah. And that's, he did say that too. Like his comments at the thing were specifically about a splashy launch and like making a big deal at launch. So yeah, you can see them like navigating away from that from there, especially once they have signups, because like once they have the signups and they have that recurring subscription, you know, it's probably, there's a lot less riding on retention. Like you can probably start opening up some of that content if you feel like that'll be more beneficial to you, while still keeping it available there. Right.
Yeah. What did he talk about the Netflix shows?
No word on the Netflix shows yet. I think those are still just managed under a completely separate agreement.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think those will survive on Netflix, at least in their current form. And then, you know, who knows what happens with future seasons. I think that's still to be determined.
Right. Because I do think that's the one case where I think you could make a pretty strong argument that, like, you know, they've just done the Defenders, and, you know, they've got a whole, you know, another calendar of new seasons on their shows, and they're still, like, trying to get, you know, momentum around the stuff they're about to launch, The Punisher. And so, like, to have this thing hanging over them where, like, oh, and then maybe they're all going to disappear from Netflix in 2 years and go to another service, like, I feel like could really sort of hamper the efforts to kind of keep that going. So I feel like if nothing else, They should keep the Netflix shows on Netflix.
Yeah.
Although, of course, I'm biased just because I just like want to still have those on Netflix.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't want to subscribe to this new Disney thing. I definitely don't.
I feel like we're, I mean, yeah, now, see, I mean, I guess this speaks to sort of the wisdom of that move is beforehand, you know, you and I don't have kids, at least as far as I know. Not going to subscribe to the Disney thing. But now that they're like, well, if you want to watch like any of the Marvel movies or, you know, any of the Lucasfilm movies, it's like, oh, maybe I will subscribe.
Yeah.
Damn.
I think that it'll still work for me better to like purchase those individually where I feel driven to.
Right.
Which is not going to be in every single case. At one time it would have been. I own like, I don't know, it's like 6 to 12 copies of like the original Star Wars trilogy in various formats across various services.
Right. That's true. Is that, I mean, every serious Star Wars fan like already owns like the original trilogy.
Yeah. But I'm not going to feel, I don't think, like too hard pressed to subscribe to this unless, and Iger talked about this too, there are some original Disney exclusive series and movies coming to the service. I think like 4 to 5 series and then maybe around that same amount of movies. So if they do that same thing for things within the Marvel and Lucasfilm Star Wars universes, then I'm going to give it a second serious look. Like that would be a big draw for me.
Right. And it seems like, I mean, they must know that and they must be ready to do something. I mean, I guess the question is what size of investment are they going to make? Is it going to be sort of like a, you know, is it going to be like a Planet of the Apes kind of, you know, investment? Or are they going to be like, oh, we're going to do like a big, you know, blockbuster Game of Thrones, not Game of Thrones in terms of like tone, but just in terms of the size of the budget and investment type show that we really want everyone to be talking about and watching, and we'll, you know, we'll do that on the service. Then, you know, like, all right, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be like a learning process whereby they, like those first ones they already have planned, that they'll probably, you know, do a lot of research and study looking at like how much that is driving return for them. I mean, ultimately, I'm sure they would love, for all of their stuff to go exclusively onto their platforms. Like that's the dream, right? You own the means of distribution and the content creation entirely and then reap all the rewards from that. But I think we're still a ways away from that. And even if they do eventually get there, it'll be many decades before it comes to that. So.
Right.
The other interesting, this is just like a real time sort of check, but the Netflix like Netflix stock is not significantly down on this news. It's like kind of trending downwards. It's like at 0.11% off its starting trading value. But I'm curious to see how this impacts them and their business and like the perception of their business, because it was seen as like a very valuable asset to have that stuff. But I think Netflix had, I mean, they kind of prepared for this in advance, like all of the stuff they've been doing around announcing new original content and making sure that stuff gets highlighted is working to their credit. I check out their YouTube account pretty regularly, and it's insane how many like trailers and teasers they've put up in the last 2 weeks alone. It's crazy. Every day if you go, there's like two new things. And there's for stuff I've never even heard of before most of the time now, whereas before you would kind of like get a long lead for some of this stuff.
Right. But they're just like, all right, here's another thing.
Yeah. Like there was it was like a driver type thing. Oh, it's some kind of gritty sort of like driver action movie, kind of like the Transformer, but something else, but some other guy. And it's just, yeah, there's so much. And that's the same with the stuff that's actually being released too, which is, shows up when I turn the thing on and I'm like, I'm going to watch this. That happened with The Mist. I didn't know The Mist series was coming. I missed that entirely and I just started watching it.
Right. And you liked it.
Yeah. So far it's great. I think we watched 2 episodes. I never saw the movie though, which is a big caveat, but, Yeah, so far, me and my girlfriend Tara have watched the first 2 episodes and it's great. And despite like not really any big top line actors in it. At least, I mean, I recognize some of them, but I'm not like familiar with, or I don't remember where from or anything like that. So, but still it's been good. I think I'm most interested to see how they draw it out for a full series and then a follow-up series or like additional seasons after that if they plan to do that. But
right. Horror series, always, it's always interesting to see how long you can kind of drag that out before it gets pretty silly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we talked about that with the Stranger Things, right? Like the, yeah. And they have kind of like already said, no, we're going to cap it. But this looks like they're hoping not. Like they want to, in a more traditional TV sense, like draw it out.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. Cool. Anything else you think about the Disney Star Wars Lucasfilm?
I guess the one other thing in terms of the Netflix stock is it also makes the another explanation is essentially that most of the sort of most of Wall Street investors sort of assumed that as soon as that news came out, they sort of assumed that Disney stuff would be disappearing from Netflix eventually.
Yeah.
And so like the real hit has already happened. And so they may be sort of approaching this as, well, this just sort of confirms what we already knew.
Yeah, it's probably already built into the pricing. That's a good point. It wasn't a surprise to anyone, I don't think.
I was disappointed, but I wasn't surprised.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, but then also more news in the streaming world.
This one feels good. This feels like good news.
Yes.
There's a Spotify Hulu bundle for students.
Yes, that is a smart move from both those companies, and also just a good value, I guess, because it's the pricing is $4.99, which is the same as Spotify's premium pricing, right?
Right.
For students, I mean. And it includes that and also Hulu's low ad package. Like there are still ads with the content, but not that many. So that's a good bundle. If I was in college, which I was once upon a time, I would like that because it's a great way to get both like access to TV and like, I probably already have the Spotify thing, you know,
right,
to begin with. So getting the other one thrown into the mix is nice. Nice deal.
Yeah. And I mean, it seems like smart in the sense that I think my sense, and I don't necessarily have a ton of like, you know, serious data to like that I've looked into to back this up, but is like, if you're a college student, I think you get the sense that everyone sort of has Netflix, but that might be it, right? So especially if you're Hulu, this is a great way just to like get people to try it out when, you know, fairly early on, before they're trained to either just pirate everything or just trained to just basically watch Netflix and nothing else. And similarly with Spotify, I mean, I think they have sort of that, certainly they're incredibly widely used, but as a way to get people used to paying for Spotify as opposed to just doing the free ad supported version. I think it seems really smart.
Yeah. I think it's, I think you bring up a good point. Like it seems to be a deal that heavily favors Hulu in the mix, I would say. Like, I wouldn't say Spotify is getting nearly as much out of it as Hulu is getting out of it, because I think they have this is tough to say because I don't really have data in front of me to back it up, but like Hulu to me seems like one of the more traditional of the over-the-top options, especially when compared to something like Netflix.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean, they certainly are, just in the sense that they were essentially created by the big networks.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So I think you know, to me, it seems like for new subscribers, at least, you know, Hulu is going to reap the majority of the benefits here.
And right.
But it sounds like also the way that this might balance out is that this is just the first of partnerships planned between the companies. Like they're looking at other ways to kind of bundle services and provide bundled offerings to subscribers. So if in future they do something aimed at not college students, like a more mass market offering, that might work better in Spotify's favor. If you have like a, you know, Gen X or whatever, who are like more likely to want TV and over the top TV, and then they get the Spotify subscription in the mix, and maybe they were traditionally like digital music purchasers, like for downloads or something. That could work in their favor too.
Yeah, it's interesting. I um, earlier this week, I wrote about this company, Scribd, which has sort of been described as like a Netflix for ebooks. I think the model is a little bit more complicated than that now, but they just sort of did a bundle with the New York Times. And I was talking to the CEO, Trip Adler, about this idea of subscription fatigue and just that there's so many different subscriptions out there now. And so I think, and you know, that he's arguing, I think seems likely is just that you're going to see more and more bundles in the future because the idea of sort of just paying for every, you know, $10 per month after the first two or three services really just starts to add up. And so you start to see, I think, like a lot of people are going to be very attracted by more of a bundled model.
Now, but does this get into, I think actually Brian wrote about this, does that then run the risk of making streaming just essentially the next iteration of cable with very little in the way of like value differentiation or anything like that?
I think for sure it does. Yeah. I mean, I think that's definitely I don't even know I guess the optimistic way of saying it is, look, they're taking what's good about, I mean, that certainly cable is a bundle, right? And so just taking what's good about that and then applying it so that you still have some degree of choice and flexibility, but, you know, that you don't have to just assemble everything and pay full price a la carte.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I mean, I do think, yeah, I mean, it sort of runs the risk that you just sort of then everything sort of ends up, you know, looking the same as cable looks now, except with like different logos that you're paying for.
Yeah. I think that the way to avoid that is to like, I mean, hopefully this just happens naturally, but like as long as competitiveness remains in the market, right? As long as these things that are essentially, you know, monoliths or whatever, monopolies don't emerge where there's just a few and they kind of quietly collude, you know, the way that...
Right. I mean, like, that is... Cable is insane, right? The fact that essentially in a lot of markets, there's really only one option, maybe two options. And you're just like, well, do you want, you know, cable television? Great. This is the package. Yeah. Good luck. Enjoy.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you don't want... You want something different? Like, get out. Like, put some rabbit ears up or, you know, just suck it, right? Yeah.
Right. I mean, that just... It seems like... Such an insane system. And we should probably acknowledge, this is here where we acknowledge that we're owned by Verizon, and I'm in a Verizon Oath office right now.
Yes.
But yeah, it just, I mean, it's such a, just like the, but the, I think, yeah, if you just have a, like an element of choice where you just have these different services and sometimes they work together and do these joint offerings, that to me, I think there's just a very, very long distance to go from this, from, you know, what we're talking about now to, you know, full-fledged sort of like cable style system for
streaming video. Well, as long as they don't
start
carving up the geographies and defending their territory or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the key.
That's really the big risk, right?
Right. Right. Where essentially everyone's sort of doing the same thing, but just in different geographic monopolies.
What if horribly, this is a really bad nightmare scenario, but like with the, you know, the weakening of sort of protections of access to broadband and stuff like that, like with the FCC rule changes coming in. What if they end up dividing it by like strata and they make like, okay, you guys can have like, let's say Hulu. Hulu can have the bottom rung. Netflix will take the premiums. Like that would be horrifying, but that could happen, especially because I don't know, the way that Comcast and the rest, and our parent company and many others are angling is to get access in this streaming in the over the top space, right? And to be able to have those services. So I do worry that maybe they could just find a new way of dividing it up and then enforce their monopolies that way. But that's a nightmare scenario. I like your optimistic scenario better. So let's let's go with that.
Yeah. Yeah. We can, we can always hope.
Yeah. And there'll be startups. They'll come up and disrupt it, right?
Right, so, right. Yeah. And I mean, I guess that's a thing. But, you know, I mean, as much as I think a lot of the sort of like talk around disruption and the importance of startups is essentially bullshit. I do think that's like an important function that they have is like that sort of, you know, the internet and streaming has just sort of opened up this space to a whole bunch of new players and made something competitive that essentially wasn't meaningfully competitive before, and hopefully that'll continue.
Yeah, and if the internet gets all clogged up, we'll have to replace it with something else, like the brain net.
we'll just do tin cans and strings.
Yeah, yeah, but linked through underground tunnels dug by Elon Musk.
There you go. There Perfect. You go. That's the real future, right there.
This is actually related to the bundling, because it's like another translation of a sort of a cable industry holdover, or like a terrestrial TV holdover. But the news that Roku, why did I pronounce it like that?
I feel like when you said it, you were like, that's how it should be. It should be Roku. That's like a much better name than Roku.
It's cooler. It's way cooler. Yeah,
right.
But they're doing a new dedicated channel for their streaming devices. I guess basically an app that'll have continuously playing movies like that are ad supported. So ads breaking up the movies, I guess, as you might get on an actual TV channel.
It seems really strange to me why you would, I mean, I guess the fact that it's ad supported sort of changes the business model, but it just seems strange to me that like Roku, like as like they're, it just doesn't seem to have much to do with what Roku is good at, like up until now, right? That they were like, hey, like they're just like the best, you know, cheap device for streaming from any of the streaming services that you'd want to use. So like launching their own channel just seems strange to me. But I mean, I think especially because they want to go public. Right. And so I guess just opening up new revenue opportunities is not a bad idea. It just seems a little odd.
Yeah. So I think that's the whole motivation. Like based on Sarah Perez's article covering this, it sounds like what Roku is saying is basically, we want a new revenue stream because she reads between the lines and shows like the revenue right now is not huge, and this would be an easy way to just sort of like essentially generate revenue from almost existing content that they already have, because they're going to use a bunch of content licensed through some of the partner apps that they have on the platform, in addition to provided by the studios directly through additional licensing agreements. So
I was looking at the list of she's talking about like working with existing like Roku publishers like American Classics, FilmRise, Nosy, OV Guide, Popcorn Flicks, Vidmark, and UU. So aside from Popcorn Flicks, I was just like, what are these companies?
Right. Yeah, yeah. There's, I mean, I think the library in general is going to be kind of like, you know, maybe it'll be like a Turner Classic Movies situation or something, but it's not going to be the latest and greatest for sure, right?
Right. Although you were excited that they're going to have Zookeeper starring Kevin James.
Yeah. I mean, as a James head, like who just follows everything KJ, wherever it goes down, I'm just very happy that they'll finally be providing some free access to his, you know, his impressive oeuvre of movies.
So. hopefully that's not the first time we used the word of in this podcast.
I threw some French in that. That was my education. Yeah.
I mean, and to be fair, you know, like even like Netflix, right? I think a lot of people say like the movie selection, I think in the last couple of years, they've managed to land a few high profile deals, mm-hmm. especially the Disney deal, which is going away, but a few high profile deals. So they have, you know, a handful of like big blockbusters that make it onto Netflix fairly soon after they're in theaters. And then like, once you get past that though, it's definitely, not bad movies, but just, you know, it's not necessarily what you would think of as the, you know, quote unquote top tier.
Yeah. I mean, they thread the needle between the like the Sharknado category of movies and some of the upper end. Like they do have some upper end, but the bulk of their movies, like the one I was describing earlier and a lot of the ones I've seen trailer for is lately, seem like very eminently forgettable, kind of like, I guess, popcorn flicks, right? That you would just throw on because you're really bored and you want to watch something that isn't offensive, but also is pretty mindless and like,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we talked about this a little bit before, but like there's sometimes this idea that with streaming and on demand, that like the idea of TV that just sort of fills time and is just sort of like junk food, like there's going to be less place for it. And maybe the ratio will change. And there'll be more sort of, you know, high quality, thoughtful stuff. But the fact is people still want sometimes just to veg out and like, or, you know, God forbid, like to be doing something else, like their laundry or writing a TechCrunch post or whatever, and just have something on in the background. And so there's definitely room for sort of just kind of like junk food filler content.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the whole premise behind TLC these days, right? It's like nonstop say yes to the dress, alternating with my 600-pound life or whatever it is.
I mean, maybe some... I mean, that's the other thing, of course, is that the thing that the one person's junk food is another person's like favorite show. Who knows? Maybe there are people who love Say Yes to the Dress.
Yeah, maybe there are people. Maybe there are people on this podcast who love Say Yes to the Dress.
Not me. Nothing against it, but...
Right. It would be me that I was referring to.
Oh, okay. Okay, okay. So you were like burning yourself, essentially.
Yeah, I was. I was the cell phone. Yeah, but... I exposed it. is that cool. The news? Is that basically what happened? Yeah.
That's the week in streaming. So I guess we should move on to our review of Little Evil. And as we always do, we'll do a segment that's our initial impressions, spoiler free, and then we'll have a spoiler discussion as well.
Yes. So general thoughts on this movie starring Adam Scott. Was there anything else noteworthy in terms of stars, directors?
Eli Craig is the writer and director. He made one film, I think he's made some other short films and some, but he's essentially known for this other movie called Tucker and Dale versus Evil,
right?
Which is also sort of a horror comedy. And Evangeline Lilly is also in the movie.
Oh, yes. That's right. How did I forget that?
She's somebody who I think kind of disappeared for a little while after Lost, and then she's like working. Maybe there's some Evangeline Lilly fans who are gonna like send me angry emails for this, but like you never like are like, oh, she's in this movie, yeah, awesome. But she's like, you know, she never like has gone away. Oh, and then of course she was in Ant-Man, and she's gonna be the Wasp, so that's awesome.
Yeah, that is
that's
awesome.
True. And those I'm excited.
Set photos are cool. I've been following that. Yeah, I'm excited about that too. I think that'll be good.
Right.
I think
I forgot about that.
This is we're getting tangent, but like the first Ant-Man was like fine to me, but I wanted a lot more out of it, so I'm hoping they bring a lot more. Like, I still enjoyed it. I just think they can do so much more, and I'm hoping that this does.
Well, you also just watch it, and you're like, there's no reason why Evangeline Lilly, you know, spoilers for Ant-Man, does not become the Wasp in the course of the first movie.
Right.
And like, they're just like, they keep finding reasons for her to like be sidelined. You're like, this is so stupid. And so the fact that in the second one, she's actually, you know, it's in the title, Ant-Man and the Wasp, like she's going to become the Wasp. And so that's a good sign.
Yeah. That'll be a good payoff. But yeah, she also, I thought she was good in this too. I thought it was, I thought she did a good job for what the role was. That was in general, I thought everybody did a good job for what the role was. And that was like, I don't know if that's a super strength. I mean, it's not really high praise for a movie, but I thought it was good. It was effective. And it's kind of like we were talking about before, where like, this is a movie you can watch and not think too hard about and like really enjoy. And it's not too long. And, you know, it's like a good, and I watched it like in a group setting with my family, basically up at the family cottage. I was a bit drunk, I'd say. So
that was that helpful. Probably helped.
Yeah. But yeah, we all had a good time. Everybody seemed to enjoy it. So
yeah, and so we should say, so the plot of it is essentially it's like a kind of a funny take on a movie like Rosemary's Baby, or The Omen, where the Adam Scott is sort of marrying Evangeline Lilly. She already has this young son who was born under these mysterious circumstances, and it sort of becomes clear very early on that there's some sort of supernatural satanic thing going on.
Yeah. And it really was a lot to some of those horror movies. And it's like, it's almost in the realm of like scary movie style parody, but it doesn't go that far. Like, it's not nearly as wacky. So,
right.
I was
trying to figure out how to describe the humor, because it's not, for the most part, like a laugh out loud movie. It's like and some of that I think maybe it's just jokes not necessarily landing with me, but also is that it sort of is this very kind of low key kind of humor, that it's not like there's some slapstick, but mostly it's not. It's more like, you know, if you kind of imagine sort of like an Adam Scott character being thrown into the middle of into the middle of The Omen. That's essentially what it is.
Yeah. It's like Parks and Recreation. It's like his character from Parks and Recreation, but like in this horror situation, right? Like, with the exception of he doesn't look at the camera and give you the sardonic look. Instead, he looks off to the distance or at another character and gives that look. But
yeah, exactly.
It's very much him and it's dead. He like, it's him. It relies heavily on him and his deadpan delivery, like in the face of exceptional circumstances, I guess. So
right.
But yeah, I mean I recommend it. I think it was a enjoyable movie night choice for the Cottage crew, which is rare to say. There's not usually a movie that everyone can agree on and that everyone can agree to having enjoyed. And no one was like, this is the best movie I've ever seen. But also no one was angry, which is basically all you can ask for.
Right. Well, we were talking about it beforehand as like comparing it to the Netflix Adam Sandler movies, which, to be completely honest, I have not watched any of and will probably never watch any of them.
No.
But like,
neither have I. I was just kind of imagining what they would be like.
Right. But there's something about this that like it is like it's not that it's like dumb, like super dumbed down humor, but it's not like aggressive, edgy humor either. That like it's, you know, like, I mean, certainly I wouldn't watch it with like a kid. There's right. definitely a lot of swearing. But like it's not like super gross or like super heavy on like the sex or anything like that. Like it is like a fairly kind of gentle comedy in a way.
Yeah. And also, yeah, I do want to, because you brought that up, there were no children present at this family viewing of this.
I assumed. Yeah. I would not. Yeah. Like maybe a teenage kid. I think a teenager would probably enjoy it.
Yeah. 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 And it's pretty inoffensive with its humor too, right? Like even if it uses some swears and stuff. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Had you seen Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
No, I didn't. I don't
think. Yeah, neither had I. And like I was researching it a little bit beforehand, and like it's because I think both movies were made for, you know, relatively small budgets. I think Little Evil is made for like I don't know, $5-7 million or something like that. And so they're, you know, these low budget horror comedies, and in a way, like, I feel like Netflix makes sense as sort of like a natural home for this kind of thing rather than this sort of, you know, kind of spotty theatrical release, which people may or may not go to, but like, you know, just making it available on Netflix, it seems like the right place for it.
Yeah. Oh, that's Alan Tudyk is in that, eh? The original Tucker.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. Yeah. He's one of the main stars there. So I will probably check that out now, based on the Alan Tudyk and then also the strength of this one. But yeah, do you want to get into spoilery talk or?
Yeah. Let's go into, unless there's anything else you wanted to cover beforehand.
No, I think that's good. So let's clearly demark this part. This is now the spoiler zone. If you want to watch this movie or if you just don't want to hear us talk about a movie that you'll never see, you can go ahead and move on, but we are going to reveal plot details now.
So what did you think of the ending?
So the ending was, I mean, it was like, it was perfect for this kind of movie, I guess. It was highly predictable, but this wasn't a movie where I was looking for plot twists and turns. It was a movie where I was looking for like satisfactory resolution to a lighthearted comedy, and that was kind of how I felt about it.
Right. Yeah, it was because you sort of know once they start talking about like stabbing the kid in the chest with the knife, you're like, that's probably not how they're going to end it. They're going to find some other way.
Yeah, because nothing about the movie to that point, like it was like, it wasn't like, even though the plot sounds, you know, transgressive, I guess, like, oh, it's a devil kid and the devil kid is doing evil things or whatever. Like, it's not a dark movie. Like, it's like, I don't know. It doesn't take anything that seriously where you would think that that is like an outcome that they would actually entertain.
Yeah, exactly. Or I would say actually one thing that's interesting is I do think one thing it does take seriously is it I think I get the sense that they're essentially really trying to do a movie that is about sort of the confusion and that you feel like as not you or me as far as I know, but like that someone might feel as a stepfather, right? Then like trying to build a relationship with a stepchild. And there's that really interesting scene, you know, with the support group where, you know, he's I think the joke is a little bit on the nose, but like where Adam Scott is like, yeah, I think my like stepson might actually be like the Antichrist, and everyone else is like, yeah, totally, that's how I feel, yeah, man.
Yeah.
And so I think that, and because of that, then you also kind of know how it's going to end, that you're like, well, there's no way that he can that he can like, you know, yeah, try to kill this kid and have that be the ending. But like the one thing I will say is like I liked it because it felt like, yeah, it sort of took things in a little bit of a different direction, even if it wasn't like a huge shock. The way that sort of all turns in like this montage at this water park And that's like the first time that Adam Scott, like his character and the kid are like really bonding. And then the kid, like you see him smile and laugh for the first time. And then like 2 minutes later, he calls him dad. Like that seemed a little bit rushed. Like that was a little bit much.
It was. For, it was like they had to do a lot of segment. Work. In a quick amount of time because they realized they were getting close to the end of their runtime or whatever. But it was also, that was also the most sinister part, right? Like if we're talking about sinister undertones or whatever, like, because in that moment, Adam Scott's character, Gary there, did actually intend to kill the child, right? Like he put floaties filled with sand. Yeah. I think filled with sand on his arms to like sink him to the bottom of the pool. Which also to me was like, he didn't think this through very well.
Like, right. For a whole bunch of reasons. Like the idea that you wouldn't get caught. It's like really like, maybe you wouldn't get like, they wouldn't necessarily accuse you of murder, but they'd be like, you were real dumb that you didn't realize that these were like full of sand.
Yeah.
At best. That's like the best case scenario.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But they also, like that, the way they tried to kind of excuse that was that it was a mutual thing.
Right.
Like the boy was also, because at this point he had already buried him alive in the backyard, right?
Yeah.
Which is how they started the movie. It was like an in media race. Like, here,
look at that. You're like, soon we'll be doing entire podcasts in languages other than English.
In Latin. Yeah. Latin and French.
Only. Just Latin and French.
And then we'll have dubbing over top of it. In the middle of the action. So they started it like so kind of midpoint through the plot of the movie where at this crisis point, basically, where the stepson, Lucas, has buried Adam Scott in the backyard alive. In which Evangeline Lilly kind of like brushes off in a pretty funny, dismissive way, right? So,
right. Well, she's like, that is it. You were on a timeout.
Yeah.
I thought was just so perfect because it was like, she was mad. Yeah. She was mad, but she was like mad in a way that was still not up to the level of what had happened.
Yeah. And I think that was also part of that theme that you mentioned earlier where they were trying to like really kind of like evoke that real stepson experience, which again, I'm hesitant to say not being a stepfather. Right.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, maybe even less to say that it's about like a real, but that they're trying to have like some emotional resonance there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
and I think
the water part though was like, I don't know, it was effective in just getting us on, it was effective as a plot device, but I think it felt, narratively it was like, wow, okay. Even from the point of view of this being a kind of a goofball-y comedy, it felt a little pat for that.
Yeah. Right. And I think honestly, like the thing that to me was like getting him to call him like dad that quickly, I feel like that didn't need to happen. You could have still had like that relationship and not have him, you know, immediately like embrace the guy who tried to kill him, you know, 3 minutes earlier. And like, it's not a secret, like that, like the kid, like that, like Adam Scott literally apologizes. Hey, I'm sorry. I tried to drown you.
Yeah.
And like, and the kid is like, and Lucas is like, oh yeah, I get it. And again, partly they try to paper that over by saying, well, then Lucas had also tried to bury him alive, but still like it was, it was a little tough to swallow.
Yeah.
I will say like the other thing maybe the most effective part as far as trying to deal with those, you know, that sort of emotional storyline was when Sally Fields is there as the, you know, disguised as the social worker. And she says, okay, well, what have you done with Lucas?
Right.
And Adam Scott's like, I drive him to school. I tried to talk to him a couple times.
Yeah,
and
they're
just like, really? That's how you tried to connect? Seriously?
No, they did do some good moments where you're kind of like, as a viewer, like, wait a minute, whose perspective, like,
whose side should we be on?
Yeah. Like, I agree. This kid looks like the, based on what we've seen so far in this movie, he looks like the Antichrist. But then in that moment, you're like, oh, wait a minute. This film is all basically from Gary's perspective. And why do we automatically trust that it's a reliable narrative perspective, right? Because when she points that out, you think back and you're like, oh yeah, he really hasn't been that great overall. He's been kind of shit, right?
Right. Yeah, that he like basically like talks to him and like is like, you know, doesn't go anywhere, and then immediately just goes to like, oh, things are crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I will say, like, I mean, just the fact that, I mean, Adam Scott is one of those actors who is just so naturally sympathetic.
Yeah.
And I think that if they'd cast someone else, in some ways, I think it would have been a tougher movie to watch, because you might have, like, more quickly just been like, Gary's a dick, which I definitely had a little bit. I mean, I feel like Gary is a little bit more of a dick than sort of the characters that I know, Adam Scott from Party Down or Parks and Rec, where I think you kind of identify with him a little bit more. Yeah. Gary is a little bit, a little bit of a shitty dad, and then also just kind of like a tool. Like, he just doesn't kind of seem that bright either.
Right. Well, that was like the, because they kind of surrounded him with those other characters, I guess, like, that's the group, like, you're part of that group, basically, as the viewer, right? Like, with Chris D'Elia and Donald Faison, too, which was, I was happy to see him there.
Right. Another guy where you're just like, oh, yeah, you're still around. Cool.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. As the other dads, there was more, too, but that are in this support group. And they, yeah, they're all kind of, like, shitty people, basically. Like, if you think about it afterwards, you're like, oh, these guys all kind of suck. But again, I don't know, it's tough to understand that situation, I guess, if you haven't been in it. But they all kind of suck, but they all are also relatable enough that I think they did a good job overall with all the casting to make the people, like, you can sympathize with them, even if they're, the things they're saying are problematic or kind of stupid or whatever, because the actors playing them are good.
Right.
Yeah. Sally Field was in this. Did you know that?
Right. Yeah. That's crazy.
I didn't recognize her until after I checked, and then I was like, oh, that was Sally Field? Like, oh my goodness. But,
well, it's interesting, yeah, because there's everyone else is a much less famous. Which isn't to say, I mean, you recognize, like, Taylor Labine and Donald Faison, but like they're not like stars or like Clancy Brown. And then you see Sally Field and you're just like, holy shit, is that like an actual like famous person?
Yeah.
But she has a good time, and she probably only worked for like 2 days. So
yeah. She's not in it that much. Clancy Brown as Reverend Gospel was also
right
strong. I mean, he's, and again, he doesn't do much in it, but he's just good in those roles where he's like...
Right, he plays like the Clancy Brown character where he's just being like creepy and scary.
Yeah.
But like fun, in a fun way.
Yeah, ominous, but, you know, a little bit goofy at the same time.
Yeah, in terms of the cast, I guess the one other thing maybe worth talking about is Bridget Everett, who plays Gary's friend Al. And she is a woman, or at least, I mean, I don't know that they ever explicitly like talk about how, you know, they identify in terms of, you know, gender. But, you know, to all outward appearances, is a woman, but then is also the dad in this, you know, same-sex relationship. And it was like, I liked it because, like, it was not ever, like, making a big deal about it. That it was just like, oh, like, that she says, like, I'm the stepdad, and that, like, you know, it's not a big deal. And everyone's like, all right, cool, you can hang out with the stepdads.
Yeah, they didn't address it at all, like, explicitly. Like, nobody said anything about like, wait, but why are you, or like, you're a dude, or anything like that. There was no, which there would have been in an Adam Sandler version of this movie.
Right. I think there's a little bit of like a raised eyebrow the first time, but only probably because like the character is definitely like also a fuck up.
Yeah.
Like all of them are, but like is like the most aggressive fuck up.
Yeah.
And so there's a thing of like, oh, you're a dad. That might not be a great idea.
Yeah.
But in terms of like gender or being like a same sex relationship, none of that like matters at all. She's like, all right, you're a dad. Why not? You're a bad one, but like you're a dad.
Yeah, and I thought overall she did a good job too. Like, it was a good pick for that role. She was a good foil for Scott. Scott's sort of like straight man delivery or whatever.
Right.
So, good combo. I would actually, like, based on that, I was like, oh yeah, I would watch this pair or this duo again if they wanted to become a comedic team up or whatever. But yeah.
Right. Yeah,
if this becomes an Adam Scott franchise of Netflix movies, which I kind of think it might.
I mean, maybe. He just like he travels, like, you know, he just goes on a vacation with his family, and there's some other like supernatural threat.
Oh, I just mean different. I think they. I was worried that they would just repeat the Adam Sandler model, but with like,
okay,
the
right.
Adam Scott in that
right.
role.
Just make another comedy next year for, you know, low budget comedy, and we'll put it up there.
Yeah. Don't you think that they might do that? I mean, I feel like it was like it fit exactly that like niche. It was like, yeah, this did what we wanted it to do exactly, and we like, I think it's like this is nothing to do with its like creative ambitions, but it's like a perfect return on investment, right? For like a $7.5 million film, I'm sure they'll get their money's worth out of it. It's just very capable and competent. And that makes me worried that they're going to just like start churning out these capable and competent Adam Scott films.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but only for the first like 15 or so.
Right. Like maybe they do 4, like the Adam Sandler deal. And then like, you know,
yeah.
Then he goes and does other things.
Yeah.
That would be good. Well, and like, you know, like Adam Scott is pretty busy. He was in, what was it? Like Big Little Lies, right? Like
yeah.
It's not like this is the only, if this was the only thing he was doing, I would be bummed out, but he seems to stay pretty busy.
No, he does. He does. I think he'll have more of a Paul Rudd type career or something.
Yeah.
Where there's all these other ones that come out and you're like, where the heck did this come from? Like there's so many Paul Rudd movies that you've probably never even just heard about. And then they just pop up one day. But
right.
Still,
well, it's interesting. Like, yeah, I definitely like when we were talking about Evangeline Lilly earlier, I was thinking of Paul Rudd because so now both Adam Scott and Paul Rudd have been married to Evangeline Lilly or in, you know, been like the romantic lead with Evangeline Lilly on film. And like they're both, I think Paul Rudd is maybe a little bit older, but like they're both like these guys who are in their 40s who like look amazing. Like they look like they're like 30. And like both of them are now starting to age just a little bit, but like they still like, you know, look a million times better than someone their age should look.
Right. They've aged just enough that they can now play like teen parents as well as parents of smaller children.
Right.
Yeah. It just increases their versatility really more than anything.
Right. Like the difference between them as teen parent versus them as 20 something slacker is like one wrinkle around each eye. It's like, it's like insane.
Yeah, for sure. Any other highlights from this, like from a plot perspective that you thought were good?
I have to say that like realizing, I didn't know what the budget was when I was watching it. And then I was like looking it up later. Obviously it was not like a giant big budget movie, but like the grand finale was like done well enough that, it didn't take me out of the movie. You're like, all right, like, you know, you're not, it's not like amazing, but like the sort of Satan stuff and giant flaming pit, like all of that was fine. You're like, all right, I was surprised that the budget was as low as it was, because it felt like everything that they wanted to do in this movie, they, you know, and this is, I'm sure like if we talked to Eli Craig, he'd be like, oh, here's like 5 different things I had to cut because of budget, but that it felt like, it didn't feel like a low budget movie. It felt like the right budget for this sort of, you know, kind of weird little comedy.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing about it like took you out of it. Like it was like, it was, yeah, it wasn't like, it obviously wasn't the Avengers or something, but it was not, any effects that were there were not done clumsily enough that you are like popped out of the fiction of the world or anything like that.
I guess one of the things I liked was,
something like this.
Yeah, exactly. I liked Tyler Labine as the wedding videographer.
Oh yeah.
And the first time you hear him, like he's just like through his phone. He's like, I got to talk to you, man. The whole way they treated the wedding was pretty good. Like where they're just like, we don't talk about the wedding.
It
was just, that was horrible. That was terrible. And then the reveal, I wouldn't say was amazing when you find out that it was like the priest, you know, spoke backwards. And then there was a giant tornado that killed a lot of people. Like that wasn't like an amazing reveal, but it was fine. You're like, all right, that's pretty good. I enjoyed that. And then to have it also told to you by this guy who's like this, what did he say? Like, did your short film like win first place at the Orinda Film Festival? Like was just, that was really fun.
Yeah, that was good. And their interactions were good too. That was one of the highlights, I think, for me too. But I'm trying to think of other like real highlight moments in the thing. I think that was maybe a highlight because they did take their time with it. Like they had enough time to do a proper build up and then a delivery with that. And then like the other parts did feel a little rushed, and maybe they got cut, or maybe it was an edit thing. But like you were talking about with the about face, or like the change of heart from Gary was kind of similar. Like that was where you would hope for pacing like that, but you didn't get pacing like that, right?
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. Otherwise, I just, like, it was fun. We did laugh. There were actual laughs from the collected audience that I had there occasionally.
I probably chuckled more than I outright laughed, but
well,
yes.
You're watching it by yourself, aren't you?
That's true. I was watching it by myself, yes.
You can't, no one laughs out loud by themselves. That's
I do. Monstrous. I'm obnoxious. I've definitely been, well, I guess my version of that is like if I'm watching like a comedy on a plane and then you sort of like chuckle.
Oh,
and
okay.
And you kind of look over and you're like, sorry.
Yeah.
I've also cried watching movies on planes. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Same. But this would not prompt any, I would be able to stifle any laughter on a plane from this movie. That's a good rating scale, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say, you know, fundamentally, there is a part of me that wanted it to be either a little scarier or a little funnier. And I feel like they could have taken both some of the horror stuff and the comedy stuff a little further.
Yep.
But like fundamentally, it was good. I'm happy I saw it.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it exists. And I'm glad Netflix, you know, bought it.
Agree. And I would recommend for people looking for some lighthearted fun to check out. That's like have we recommended everything we've watched so far?
We have. I mean, as I look back, I think like I would stand behind everything we've recommended.
Sure, same. I think part of it is that we don't want to waste our time, so we try to like stack the deck.
Right. We sort of look at the list and we're like, well, this is probably like the best.
You
know, I would say that of all the things that we've reviewed so far, the Little Evil is probably the one I would recommend the least, like in the sense of.
Interesting. You know,
I just think, well, I don't know, maybe the second half of The Defenders too.
Yeah. I was going to say this might be the thing I recommend the most in terms of like broad enjoyability. Like it's the broadest appeal. Thing.
Right. It's the broadest appeal, but it's like also feels in some ways like the least essential that you're just like, yeah, if you see it, go ahead. But if you never see it, I don't think you're missing out that much.
Yeah.
Versus like Okja, I don't know that everyone will like it, but I think people should watch The Tick. I don't know that everyone will like it, but I think it like does something unique. So whereas this, I'm like, this is fine, whatever.
Yeah, agree. It's funny that I just realized that we do this after all the spoilers, because presumably everyone has already watched the thing, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We should probably. You're seeing us like, or hearing us, you know, rethink the format.
The gears
live.
Are turning.
But I mean, we do like do a recommendation beforehand. It just, I guess it feels weird not to like return to the big picture
and do
like,
a verdict.
The spoiler section.
No, I think a verdict is worthwhile. And I'll bet there's a bunch of people who just listen and then make up their minds afterwards too. Not everybody cares about spoilers. Some people don't.
Yeah, those people are insane, but yes. I understand. I've definitely done that. Especially if it's something that I think is bad and like I'm never going to watch it and I just want to like listen all the way through, like we can, you know, that I
I do that too. Agree. Cool. Yeah, I think then let's move on from that. What do you have any recommendations or stuff that you're looking forward to watching that's coming up or that's being released soon?
I think BoJack Horseman is coming out this week.
It is. It's coming out on Friday.
There's
a few different things coming out on Friday.
The other thing we could try to do is get like an early release, a review copy of the new Angelina Jolie movie, which is coming out next Friday.
Ooh.
So we could, you know, that when the episode hits, we could, you know, do like The Defenders again, where we get it right when it's the episode hits right when it's going live.
Yeah, we could try to do that. I don't even
look
know
at all this backstage
about that.
Talk.
I know,
like,
I know.
Happening.
This is how it works. This is how the sausage gets made. It's great. That's a horrible expression too. I hate that expression. Next week is like unrelated to the next week is the iPhone week. Not related to any streaming content necessarily, but the big iPhone reveal will be there. Who knows? There could be some content announcements. There's supposed to be a 4K Apple TV. Announced at this thing, so we might see something come out of that. Also, I don't know if you want to talk about this, but I'm definitely going to watch this Netflix TV show about Final Fantasy.
Have you seen that? No, I have no idea what that is.
I've also never played Final Fantasy. Dad of Light is what it's called.
It's called Dad of Light?
Yes. And it's an 8-episode series about a young man who lives with his parents and really, really loves the online game Final Fantasy XIV. And there, he doesn't get along well with his dad, but then his dad retires early and they start, I think, playing Final Fantasy XIV together. And then that's a bonding experience for them.
I don't even, what? That seems so weird.
Yeah. And like the main character basically says like, oh, happy retirement. Here's a PlayStation 4. Here's Final Fantasy 14. And, it, you know, enjoy. And so the dad starts playing that game. And then the son becomes his friend in the MMO, like in the game world, but doesn't tell him that it's him. And then they have like, yeah. So it sounds terrific. I think I'm going to try to watch that for sure.
I can't even, like this, yeah, this is blowing my mind. I have no idea what this is even going to be like.
I know. It doesn't, I have that plot synopsis, but I don't know anything about like format or if it's an animated show in part or, I mean, I know it's in part at least real actors, but we'll see. It should be great.
By the way, like one thing I feel like making, like just because now we have like this internal document where we're tracking like release dates and everything, like, and I think I was vaguely aware of this before, but it really drives home the fact that Netflix just makes so much more content than anyone else.
Yeah.
Like on this like release calendar for September, like there's like 15 different items for Netflix. For Amazon, there's like two.
Right.
For Hulu, there's one. This isn't necessarily completely comprehensive, but like in terms of things that we might conceivably review, it's just like, yeah, it's just like Netflix is just so, like it's just doing so much more than either Hulu or Amazon.
Yeah. And it's that spend, right? It's just the money they're putting into it. But they're really outpacing them.
But it really speaks also to, I think, how like you can, in some ways, like, I mean, obviously you need like a catalog of content, but if you have like a big show that people know about, like Transparent on Amazon or now with The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, like you can like still be like in that conversation, even if you're not putting out a new show or a new season like once a week.
Right. And maybe that's the, I mean, I'd be interested to see the individual budgets for a lot of this stuff, right? Like maybe Amazon just spends a lot more on far fewer and then Netflix kind of spreads its bets. But
right. I think that's certainly possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And Netflix, right, so Netflix stuff is like, well, actually, how many episodes was Hulu's The Handmaid's Tale?
It was, I want to say 10? Let me see. Maybe it was 13.
So it's not a difference there. I thought maybe there was a difference in length of series.
Let me see. Let me get that right so that this one we can actually verify while we're still, it's 10 episodes. Nailed it. Right on the dot.
Yeah. So that's not what it is. So yeah, it must be just sort of like price of acquisition and stuff like that. And priorities.
Right. And just when you're getting stuff up and running, I think it takes a little while, you know, in the same way that like in 2013, you know, Netflix had House of Cards, and then I think there were several months before it released another high-profile original release.
Yeah, I think so. Cool. So cool. Yeah, we have a lot of possibles for next week, but I don't know. We have some weird left field options and some normal.
So either BoJack Horseman or First They Killed My Father, maybe.
Okay, that's what the name of the movie is, right?
The Angelina Jolie movie. Yeah.
Wait, is this the Angelina Jolie movie where she got in all kinds of controversial hot
water? Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, yeah. But that turned out not to be the case, right? Or she says it's not the case that she...
Yes. So basically it was a question of... There was a Vanity Fair profile of her about her life post-Brad Pitt. And she was talking about directing this film and she's quoted as saying that they basically... The way they would audition the kids is basically playing this game where they would, you know, have the kid pretend to like you know, beg for money, and then they would take the money back from the kid, and they'd see how upset they would get. And you know, obviously, to do this to kids in a fairly, you know, in a region that's already fairly troubled seemed kind of messed up. And
yeah.
And so then there's all this whole controversy about that, and then she denied that. She said that's not what I said, that's not what happened. And Vanity Fair said no, I mean, we have the tapes, this is what you said, I don't know what to tell you. So it was, I mean, it was also like, if you read the original article, like the way they describe it is very confusing, and it's hard to know exactly. I don't know. That was like why, like, I understood why people got mad, but it was hard to like really get too worked up, because I was like, this whole description of this audition process is just very confusing too. So I don't really understand what you're talking about.
No, exactly. Yeah. You could make strong arguments for both of their like stated interpretations to be correct. So I think it's tough to say. But
right. Yeah.
Be careful with how you say things, I guess, is the rule of that one. Yeah.
Exactly.
Cool.
I mean,
yeah.
The other thing I will point out that we may, I don't think we want to do as a main review, but if people are tired of us saying positive things, is I think Inhumans is in theaters right now.
Oh, yeah. It's at IMAX. Oh, God. Yeah. I don't want to go see it at IMAX. That's such a waste.
All right, we'll wait until it actually premieres on TV, and we'll talk about it then.
But maybe, like, for the sake of the listeners, we should
right.
expose.
I mean, that would be a fun one if we like to do like a live.
bring in a recorder and do quiet tape at the back of the theater.
Right, there's not going to be anyone else in this theater. Yeah, Who the hell else is going to go see Inhumans in IMAX? I don't understand that.
All right. Well, one or all of those things might happen next week. So.
Yeah, anything could happen.
Yeah, stay tuned. We like to keep you guessing here on Original Content. That's the name of the podcast. And I should, let's promo, like us and subscribe. Like us and subscribe. Like us.
Please,
I don't know.
Do.
Put a rating. Put a rating on iTunes, in Apple Podcasts. So we need that. We love that. It's our life-sustaining juice.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.